Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Roker Report podcast in association with Vox Brewery. Sadly, none of your usual hosts are available, so you'll have to make do with the B team this evening. I'm your host Craig, and joining me to discuss Sunderland's 1-0 defeat against Coventry City are fellow Roker Reporters Ant and Sam. How are we, gents?
Not too bad. A little bit gutted after today, but you know, we'll soldier on, we'll move on.
Yeah, it's good that we've had a few hours to sort of calm down, but you're still not great after that, are you?
Well, I suppose once we've relived it, who knows, the anger
might come back.
The anger might skyrocket once again. So we are in different surroundings for the main show this evening. We're back in our mobile recording unit, otherwise known as the Hilton Hotel, so we may have an interval at some point for a top-up of pints. Shall we get stuck in?
Yeah.
Let's get stuck in. So, in case you missed it, Sunderland fell to a narrow defeat at St Andrews against Coventry City on Sunday afternoon. Phil Parkinson named an unchanged side, but he shuffled the pack and made changes to the bench as Joe Lynch and Will Grigg returned to the squad in place of Tommy Smith and Duncan Watmore. The home side burst out of the traps and led after less than 2 minutes, with Jamie Allen capitalising on some poor defending before releasing Matt Godden to slot past John McLaughlin. Tom Flanagan and Charlie Wyke both spurned big chances before the break as Flanagan volleyed wide from a Chris Maguire set piece and Wyke then headed over from close range. Max Power thought he had levelled 15 minutes from the end, but his deflected efforts took a ricochet off an offside Luke O'Neill, and the officials unfortunately correctly ruled that one out. The lads did push forward until the final stages, but Coventry held firm to take the points. And I'm going to come to you first. What's your initial thoughts on how the game unfolded?
Yeah, I thought, once again, in front of the Sky cameras, I thought we were pretty poor. I think we should just get banned from being on Sky altogether, because we seem to play a bit of football when nobody is bothered about us. I thought from the get-go, we were sloppy. The goal's just awful. I think the defence should be doing a lot better. The goalkeeper should be doing a lot better. We've kind of got into the game, started playing some nice little passing sort of movement, but we don't create much, do we? Like today, we're looking at set pieces where we're looking more dangerous. Like Flanagan should have scored, Wyke should have scored from lovely balls in by Maguire. But then even in the second half, I thought we were going to like just dominate that second half. I thought Coventry were comfortable, to be honest. Got that goal through Power, which was correctly ruled out. I don't know what 09 was doing running that far forward like from a shot, but hey ho. And yeah, I thought Coventry saw the game out all right. Like I say, I thought we were just poor. I thought it was an average performance and probably a hangover from Tuesday night when we struggled to get a point against Fleetwood. I think both times we've just not been at the races, so to speak.
Isn't it just typical that we moan on every single week about the officials getting the decisions absolutely, you know, kind of all over the shot, and then lo and behold, today I would say the referee got probably 95% of the decisions absolutely bang on. There's not many things you can criticise him for, but lo and behold, we have a goal chalked off. It's quite frustrating.
It was spot on. I mean, like you say, 09 is gone. He's like in the 6 yard box, isn't it, when it hits him? I don't understand why he's that far forward. You know, he's obviously expecting it to hit the keeper and come out him, but he would have been offside anyway. They got it right in kind of the long way around fashion, didn't they? Because the linesman didn't put his flag up, and then they were saying why, oh, he couldn't see, so I wear a cap, you know. There is such thing as caps. But yeah, the referee, to be fair, the ref, I thought he was good today. You know, he let the game flow instead of book, like 09 could have been booked early on. Flanagan probably should have been booked for kicking the ball in the stands, trying to time West Brom 1-0 down. And then their goalkeeper did exactly the same thing and got booked. But, yeah, I thought the referee had a good game. Like I said, that was the big decision, wasn't it, the goal? And it was spot on, really. Like I said, the long way around, but they got it right in the end.
That's it. Sam, what about you? What were your thoughts?
No, I agree. I think, ultimately, we've been punished for a poor start, because it was a shocking start, really. I mean, to score inside 2 minutes and to concede when you're playing at that point basically a five at the back and have your two centre-halves run out to the same ball, leaving a gap in the middle, is pretty shocking. And I think just before that as well, it was after about 10-15 seconds they got in down the right hand side, and it was really similar to Fleetwood, where they scored on around 5 minutes, and just before that they got in as well, and you're just thinking, well, you've had the warning, just learn from it. But we didn't. And it's all well and good responding and maybe controlling the game, but if you're going to concede early or concede in general, then you're fighting a losing battle in some ways. So it was a game that, with the results yesterday, was there for us, but maybe because of yesterday's results, we're still in with a shout. But it was just poor, wasn't it? I mean, I can't remember the last time we went away from home to a team that's doing well and up the top of the league, and we haven't got beat, really. I mean, I'm thinking now, Wickham we've lost to away from home, Rotherham we haven't played yet, Coventry we've lost, Portsmouth we've lost, Fleetwood we drew,
Peterborough
we got battered. So if you want to get promoted, then you've got to at least give teams a game away from home, especially the big ones. So disappointing in that sense, but I don't think we were outclassed today. Just like I said, we've been made to pay for a really, really poor start to the game.
Well, how much of a concern is that? Because that, as you mentioned, is for the second consecutive game where we've started incredibly slowly. We had the warning sign again today. We had that, obviously, within the first couple of minutes against Fleetwood. And, I mean, I don't know. What can we put that down to? Is it a lack of communication in the middle of the pitch? Because the concentration levels would highlight it as a massive, massive success in games prior to this. And then, lo and behold, we come out immediately, and it just looks like, you know, we're not prepared, we haven't, you know, got going, and then, lo and behold, we've been punished within the first 5 minutes in both games. I mean, today, within 90 seconds.
I think it's a mentality thing, because judging off what Partington said during the week, he said, look, after Fleetwood, he said, look, we started poorly and we can't afford to do that. We've got to be on the front foot. So from what he's saying, the instruction from him is start the game well, or at least, if you're going to, because they were always going to come out the blocks, they needed a win to go top. So if you're expecting that, the main thing is just to stay compact. But the gaps that were there from the start, particularly like in between Power and Dobson in the defence, and then the goal was shocking defensively, which I can't remember the last time we've conceded. That's been a defensive mistake since Partington's turned it round, so to speak.
Well, again, that was one of the positives, so to speak, that, you know, we had shored up a lot of the defensive mistakes. In the beginning of Parkinson's time in charge, it did seem that there was at least two or three of them every single game, and you were guaranteed to get punished at least by one of them. But in respect of the past two games, we've played opposition in and around us. Do you think that's now teams beginning to do their homework on us? That, you know, they're coming out and they've perhaps watched us prior, and lo and behold, we've been blowing teams away within a 10-minute spell in the first half. You know, Ipswich come here and they didn't really let us get going, at least until the second half. I mean, even Bristol Rovers nullified us quite a bit until the second half, when they went down to 10 men. But Fleetwood, they had a game plan, and Coventry certainly did today. Is that a cause for concern, do we think?
I think, yeah, especially since both teams have nullified Denver Hume and London Gooch. As Hume today didn't have the greatest of games, and on Tuesday night they doubled up on Gooch really, really well. I thought Fleetwood did. So basically we kind of need to think about doing something else. You know, our best player probably is Chris Maguire, so get involved a bit more. It is quite worrying, because if that's our plan A and it isn't working, that's all every team that we've got coming up is going to do. They're just going to say, right, their left side's their best attacking threat, we'll just double up on them, leave the right hand side free, and then we don't have either the sense or the guile to do it on the right hand side. Then it is a bit of a worry, but that's what Parkinson's been brought in to do, isn't it? He's going to have to change it. It does look as if, like, Fleetwood did it brilliantly, I thought, on Tuesday night, and currently today, possibly the fact their best player was their right back. Thought that Dabo,
he was incredible, wasn't he?
Really, really yeah. good. Thought he was strong, positive, and stuff like that. And we still never, even in the second half, never got Maguire into the game as much as what we probably should have done.
Do you think that we're learning our lessons in respect of you knew that Lyndon Gooch wasn't getting much change out of their right back? Is it maybe a criticism perhaps on Parkinson's point of view, where you think, you know, change this up a little bit earlier? We discussed prior to recording that his substitutions were a little bit erratic, and the formation is, you know, it's set in stone, but lo and behold, if we're chasing a game, all of a sudden he's got six people up front. It doesn't seem to revert to like a 4-4-2 or a three up front. It's kind of all or nothing.
Certainly, and what I can't understand is why Maguire and Gooch don't alternate. You know, yeah, they started doing it at the start of the season, and they've barely done it since.
Yeah.
Even McGeady was in the side, he kind of alternated with Gooch. And if it's not working, then try and swap them over. You see good teams do that, and it would give Knight Maguire just that little bit more extra. You know, to give us a little bit more extra as well. As to the changes, in like Tuesday night, we literally brought every striker to our system on.
I thought Craig Russell would get a goal.
Exactly, and then we signed and we were running around all over, luckily enough got an equaliser. But then today they bring Semenyo on, and Gooch is now playing left wing back, and Gooch was still doing his role and the role Semenyo was meant to be doing, because obviously Semenyo was a striker. So Semenyo was getting brought into the middle quite a lot, so Gooch was like literally doing two jobs of two men. So yeah, it's kind of up to Parkinson to kind of find this system where he can fit bringing subs on to kind of make it a bit more sort of to our advantage, really, because it's just not at the minute.
So going back to the lineup itself, there was mentions that there was doubts midweek over the fitness of Gooch and White. Were you surprised to see us unchanged again? I know, you know, we kind of do this every single week. Is he going to make one change, two changes? But they look quite leggy a few times throughout the course of today, and I think in terms of at half time they began to water the pitch conveniently on our side. And I know ironically Joey Barton said that we'd done that all Tuesday, but lo and behold,
said we weren't going to mention Joey Barton.
Well, yeah, we'll edit this bit out. But was it again another opportunity, do you think, where we should have chopped and changed going into the day? I mean, you mentioned Lyndon Gooch. If Gooch and Maguire don't have a good game, then Sunderland as a whole don't have a good game. But unfortunately, I think there's been a few of them now where it's developing into that pattern of game where Gooch has gone slightly off the boil. So is it maybe time to take him out? I mean, we've discussed Charlie Wyke. I think we could perhaps definitely agree it's time for maybe Charlie Wyke to come out the side. Denver Hume didn't have a good game today. People tell me that Declan John is a real person. I'm yet to see him. I don't even remember seeing a scarf above his head, so I'm not convinced he's real. But was today one of those times where you say, right, let's change this, maybe have a bit of a surprise lineup where they perhaps haven't done the homework? Because I'll be honest, I think despite all of our huffing and puffing, you know, Coventry done their job very, very well, and they didn't really break a sweat. Their backline went unchallenged quite an awful lot.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't want this to become an anti-Charlie Wyke podcast, because it's literally every week we're saying he's not doing it, but the proof is in the pudding. Now, today, he was absolutely awful. You know, the ball was going up to him. He doesn't bring it down. He doesn't bring strikers into the play. He literally, I cannot think for a big man what he does. You know, and I thought today, after they'd scored, he hit this volley, didn't he, from just outside the box. It just went wide. I thought, oh, he's going to have a decent game today. And that was all he did. And you've got a Northern Ireland international. I know Lafferty's pretty much the same kind of striker. However, Lafferty does a lot more with his head. He just looks more sort of imposing. Mm-hmm. So I would definitely have made that change. And as far as Gooch goes, I do think Gooch does need a rest. The issue I've got is I'm not overly convinced Semenyo's a like-for-like replacement for him, so I don't know who I would bring in for him. Possibly Watmore, but Watmore wasn't fit today. That might go down badly with everybody.
I was going to say.
Now we're out with the Watmore brigade. But we haven't really got that like-for-like sort of left winger, have we? Possibly maybe move Hume further up and then give John a game. But like, I'm with you with Declan John. Does he exist? Like, I put on Twitter today at half-time, have we even signed Declan John? Because it's such a surprise how he's not even making the bench and Conor McLaughlin is.
Yeah.
And this is a Welsh international who we signed on loan from... Was it Swansea we signed him on for? So surely it's in a contract that we have to play him certain amount of times, otherwise they wouldn't have let us have him. You know, so like, what is going on with that? I really don't get it.
For some of the new lads who came in January, who we expected to feature a lot more, obviously we've mentioned Declan John, you've got Scowen alongside that as well. Do you think they're going to have, you know, a massive element of frustration that think that they've both dropped a division? Scowen in particular, who...
I was Scowen, I'd be really surprised.
I think he played, you know, give or take, around about 15 to 20 games, and then lo and behold, he's had no involvement at all. 5 minutes here and, you know, 20 minutes away at Oxford as well. Is that a case of maybe we've brought in the wrong players, or perhaps Parkinson just does not have confidence in who he's bought? Because, as you mentioned there, in terms of who do we, say, drop Lyndon Gooch for, we do seem pretty stuck in the fact that we've doubled down on plan A. Mm-hmm. So if, for example, a game like the day is going against us, we don't really have much that we can change it by, in terms of you either go six up front like we did today and again, obviously, like we did against Fleetwood. But it's like you said, there's not really much of a spark or anything to bring off the bench. What more? Well, we're not going to... No, let's not. Yeah, it's not going to happen, is it?
He's probably the only option, though, isn't he, for Gooch? You know, like I say, Semenyo looks to me like he's a striker.
He's more of a central player than he looks like he could play wide, but it wouldn't be his preferred position, would it, Semenyo? He looks like the type of striker that... I know people hate cliches, but could offer you something different, which is what we've always been saying about Watmore, so read into that what you will. But I think what you were talking about there with the likes of Semenyo and that, it's a weird one, because you can't tell me that when they were meeting with Parkinson, they've been told you won't really play because they wouldn't have came. So is it a case of he doesn't like what he's seeing in training, or he's trying to give the likes of Dobson confidence? Because it seems like, because we only play two in the middle, you would think they're going to get a bit leggy, but we never really seem to change the middle two ever. And you think you've got someone like Scowen on the bench, you'd bring him on maybe 60-70 minutes to do most of the running. So, but what you were saying before about have teams found us out, I think that might be one of the downfalls of playing the same 11 every week, because teams know if you're the fullback of whoever, say we're playing Gillingham next, you're going to sit and watch Lyndon Gooch, how he plays, because you know he's going to play. And if you're the centre half, so you're going to be talking to each other about, all right, Charlie White does this and this, so you know exactly what you're playing. So I think we are crying out for changes, and I think we were before today, to be honest with you.
I don't think that it would be any surprise if we rocked up next Saturday, then lo and behold, we see the same starting 11.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Going out against Gillingham.
No. I don't understand. Like Ant was saying earlier, the last thing we want is to get on someone's back and have a go at someone like White, but. How is he warranted staying on the pitch ahead of Lafferty, who came on today and within 5 minutes was putting himself about winning the ball back? I couldn't understand if Saturday 2 o'clock we saw the team sheet and it was the exact same 11 that started today.
I'll need to fact check this, but I seen this on Twitter earlier on that Charlie White in his last 50 league games scored 9 goals and assisted 5. Now, for a team like us who, we're at the business end of the season now, we're expecting to be competing for automatic promotion, it's just not good enough, is it?
No.
I mean, Will Grigg was pretty much bombed out very, very early under Parkinson. And I know that Wyke perhaps has been somewhat fortuitous in terms of when our sort of turn in form, if you like, he was up front. But I can't think, besides those 9 goals and obviously only the 5 assists, of any major moments where he's bringing people involved in play. I mean, I don't think he uses his body very well. And like you said earlier, you don't want it to turn into a criticism or anything like that. But if we've got 10 games left now, and let's be fair, we've probably got to win them all to stand any chance at all.
Yeah.
Because there are so many teams who are in good form up the top. You've got to look now, whether you're going to upset some players, but you've got to look to try and change this now, surely.
Well, you've got to be looking at, like, there's 10 games left, and you want to be looking at your main striker to be probably hitting 7 goals in them 10 games. On his hand on heart, don't think White will get 2.
No.
So you look at the other teams that we've got around us. You've got Rotherham, who've got Freddie Ladapo, who's scoring goals for fun. Godden today for Coventry. You know, I mean, Godden's a journeyman League One striker. He scored 14 goals this season, which is a good return. You know, you've got Ivan Toney, who's probably the best striker in the league for Peterborough. Eckhart Fenmer's even scored more goals than White this season, I believe. So that just goes to show that if we're relying on White to get our goals and he's not delivering, and then hopefully that mantle goes to Maguire or Gooch. Now, in the last 2 games, Gooch has certainly been off the boil. Maguire kind of hasn't been in the game as much as what he would have liked. Now, if they're both not scoring, who's going to score? We had to rely on power in the last minute, you know, 97th minute to score a nice little goal, to be fair to him. But even today, power, if that goal had ever gone in, that would have been power again. And it's just who else? Who else is going to be scoring our goals? We need to be beating teams, you know, like you say, we'd be winning probably at least 9 out of the next 10 games to go up. And who's going to get the goals? That's the worrying thing.
Were you surprised, either of you, to see Will Grigg back on the bench today? I know there was discussions in the week that Parkinson had mentioned, you know, he was doing extra training, he wanted to be involved. Apparently he scored in the behind-closed-doors game. With Lafferty also against Carlisle in the week. And one of the bits that we've always mentioned is, if he's not getting, you know, any minutes in the starting 11, if he's not even getting in the squad, why not put him in the 23s and at least make sure that he's fresh and he's fit for it? Was it a bit of a surprise after he talked to him so much that, okay, first of all, that he is on the bench, but at least second of all, when you're chasing a game, maybe just bring him on? You know, he's always had that fox-in-the-box reputation, and I know it hasn't worked for us yet, but you think if some of the chances fall today, I know there was one late on where Maguire had just took his foot away and he kind of lost it out the box, but you've got to think at least somebody with Will Grigg's reputation is perhaps going to trap back and shoot and maybe carve out an opportunity.
I couldn't understand why. So you haven't, I don't know the exact figures, but I'd say it's been a good few weeks where he hasn't made the squad. And then to put him on the bench, you're thinking, right, he must be coming on, especially it was a type of game where you just shove your strikers on. Like you said, someone like Will Grigg, put him in the box and just say, get one chance. Because if you're going to put him on the bench and not play him, to me, I'd rather you put one of the kids on the bench for a bit of confidence or something. It was just a weird decision, to be honest. It just seemed a bit, not false hope for him, but just a bit strange that he's sitting there watching White play as badly as he did and not come on for him for, I think Ant said earlier, why not bring him on for White in the last 10 minutes or something? Just, you've already got Lafferty on the big hold-up striker. Just have your finisher on the pitch.
But is it something different, isn't it? Like, why not try it? 4-4-2 or something like that? You know, obviously that wasn't working. And you could tell even in the second half, even when Lafferty came on, we were still struggling to create anything. So why not try that? And to see, like, even, I mean, we were just watching on the television, you know, I don't know how many times he's got out and warmed up, but you would thought if he was warming up vigorously, Grigg, the camera would have gone on him because of the amount of the story that is, how he's been a flop at Sunderland and stuff like that. And he didn't even, I don't think the camera panned him once. He was sitting having a laugh at Conor McGottman. That was it. So he's obviously not warmed up as much. I just think it's kind of, obviously Watmore was injured today, so I just thought, oh, who are we going to pick? Oh, Grigg, he'll do.
Do you think that there has perhaps been a bit of a change in attitude around him maybe this week on social media? There's been a lot of people asking to see him back involved. And I remember particularly this time last year when, you know, Charlie Weickert went through a horrific run of form. Then lo and behold, something just kind of changed overnight. And then the fans all of a sudden are kind of singing his name and getting behind him because he was putting a bit of a shift in. You know, is that something that you could at least expect to see? Because I know, granted, when Will Grigg's been involved this season, okay, he hasn't done well. There was a time when he was booed off the pitch. You'll have to forgive me, I can't remember the exact game, but it was quite a scathing reception when he was booed off. And a lot of people perhaps would have thought that there's no way back, but do you think all of a sudden now, let's say he's, you know, starting 11, or if he gets back off the bench maybe next week, do you think that there's a chance for him to put himself back into the good graces?
Well, you look at the change in Maguire and Parkinson, especially since Nick Allenby's coming, how fit Maguire looks. Now, you've got to think that Grigg must be doing something in training, like you say, with his behind the closed doors. He scored a goal on Tuesday up in Carlisle, weren't they? And then apparently a few weeks ago, him and Lafferty were playing in it behind closed doors, and he scored twice and set up two for Lafferty. So there's obviously, if we've changed our system and things like that, now why not just give him a, he might have changed, you know, he might start doing a bit of runaway, he might be a bit more fitter, he might want to play a bit more. I mean, surely if you're Will Grigg and you're sitting not getting into the 18, you're going to be thinking, well, what am I going to do to get into the 18? You know, he's a professional footballer, he's going to be wanting to play. So, yeah, I mean, it is, and for us as well, to have someone like that who can score a goal and we're not using it, I think it will sort of creep into fans' minds now. We're like, yeah, we've got Will Grigg now, so why not? You know, we could do a lot worse.
I think the reason that you're seeing fans' attitudes might have changed towards him is because with Charlie Wyke, everyone sort of, you've always known he's not the best finisher or whatever, but he was sort of getting by because of his hold-up play and his link-up play. But I'd say over the last month, if not longer, he hasn't even got that. So I think fans are thinking, well, if he's not going to hold up the ball, we'd rather have someone like Greg, who you know isn't physical, but give him half a chance, we might get a goal. Because if Wyke isn't giving you the physicality and he's also not giving you the finisher, you'd rather have one over the other.
You've got to think as well with our wingers playing like a lot of lower balls into the box now, a lot on the floor, that Greg will kind of feed on them a lot more than what Wyke does. So it might be worth it. I'm not saying it's going to change, he'll change our season or anything like that, but you know, at the minute, Wyke is not going to. I don't think Wyke's going to improve, and for some reason he doesn't particularly want to give Lafferty a go, so why not?
I think on Saturday Lafferty should start, and I would even, unless it's going drastically wrong, I would just give Wyke the rest, bring on Greg as your second striker, or
I would leave him out altogether,
I would maybe put him on the bench in case it's, I mean, he's not going to exactly save us if it's going horrendously, but I would start Lafferty and then obviously, if you win in handsomely, take him off for Greg or bring Greg on if you want the goal, and just try something different. If it doesn't work, then you're thinking, right, well, it hasn't worked. But like a lot of people were saying during the week, start Lafferty against Coventry, and if it doesn't work, people can say, oh, well, it didn't work. At least we've tried. Because if you don't try it, we're always going to be sitting here after every match saying, why don't we try that? Why don't we try that? So I know he's got his best 11. He obviously likes Wyke a lot, but I think he knows now that he's got to give Lafferty and Greg a chance. Like it definitely Lafferty, because every time I've seen him come on, he's looked lively and he's looked like he can't do much more apart from score than warrant a place.
I think the fans will probably start criticising again if Wyke continuously is playing and continuously isn't performing. You know, if he does start next week and ends up scoring a couple of goals, then fair enough, and fair play to Patterns and Four sort of, you know, sticking by him. But his form, as Sam said, his form in the last month has been shocking. You know, he just hasn't looked as if he wants to get on the end of anything, and he hasn't really made a telling contribution, has he, really? Can't remember. When was his last goal? Last goal was Tranmere, was it? That was, what, 5-6 games ago?
Took around the... Who did he score?
Oh, yes, sorry, Bristol Rovers, wasn't it?
That was a strange goal.
But that was a very strange goal. It took them about half an hour to get on the keeper.
I think somebody described it on Twitter as one of those half-time kind of competition things where...
I think it was Alex.
And I think it just nailed it to absolute perfection. I mean, it literally looked like it was slowed down. It was...
The keeper was really strange. He sort of came out and then thought, oh, what do I do now?
Yeah, I mean, like, the last few podcasts I've been on, I do feel like I've broken a record, like, criticising Wyke, but I really want to see it, something else up front. You know,
overall, in terms of this week, when we kind of all had a bit of a crack on prior to going in for the Fleetwood game, we said that we needed 4 points. Is this now at the stage where you think it's over and done with for us, the top two? Do you still think there's a chance? Because personally, I thought we played okay today. I thought we were the better side for large parts. I thought Coventry were arguably the best defensive side we've played against, and we didn't challenge them enough, but we've seen an awful lot of the ball in terms of when you've seen it back on Sky and they put all those possession stats up. You know, we controlled an awful lot of that in 10 to 20 minute periods, but we just didn't seem to create anything. And you could say the same against Fleetwood as well, in terms of when they tried to slow it down. So at this moment, is there any sort of air of concern? Do you think it's over and done with now, or do you still think there's a chance?
I don't think it's over and done with, just for the fact how inconsistent everybody is bar Coventry. I think Coventry might end up running away with it now, but for second place I still think it's wide open, and you know, we've got a fair few of them to play yet. We've got Peterborough at home. Gillingham next week's a massive game, by the way, because Gillingham are unbeaten in a long time. They draw a lot of games, they'll come set up to draw. You know, they'll come set up and try and get a point. So that's a massive game. But no, I don't think it's all over. I think a lot of sort of knee-jerk reactions today from everyone was like, oh, that's it, playoffs. You know, but you can never give up, especially with 10 games to go. You know, we've still got an opportunity, but it's how we cope from today's win. When we bounced back after getting beat off Portsmouth, we bounced back really, really well.
Yeah.
We need to do that again, and then we need to keep that up. So I don't think it's over, but it's a bad week. We've had a bad week. You know, two teams that are around us, we failed to beat both of them. You know, lucky enough to get a point, don't get us wrong, because they're a last-minute goal. But, yeah, it's been a bit of a... I think it's been a little bit of a... sort of when you take stock of what you've got, really, hasn't it? I think it's been one of them kind of weeks.
We're a bit out of sync. I know we're normally in the studio and we've got a professional kind of layup. We'll do the three-word review and we'll do the questions. So we're just going to kind of chuck this in any old order, really. Philip West, obviously of the Roker Report Parish, he put a talking point out earlier on saying that there's a mental weakness in the team when it does come to these crunch games. We lack the resilience and the determination to come to stadiums like St Andrews and dig out results. It happened at Portsmouth, it's happened again today, and it's an issue that needs addressing ASAP. Now, we've got 10 games left. Predominantly, most of them are away from home. Places like Burton have never been easy for us. Even some of the home games where you've got teams like Peterborough coming here, they're all in contention, really. Rotherham away on the last day of the season. In terms of the next 10 games, realistically speaking, to be in with any sort of chance, do you think we need to win them all?
So Rotherham's last game of the season, so if you're talking before then, 9 games, you need to win 8 or 9, really, don't you? So it, I don't think, I mean, when the final whistle went today, I was a bit like, oh, that's playoffs, book your Wembley hotel, blah, blah, blah. But I do think it's going to change every week, and it's been the same for a while. Now you win one, you lose two, you go up and down. But I think if we went on a run now where we didn't win in the next two or something, I think we would have to sort of look towards the playoffs. But even then, I think if it came down to it that we knew we were playoffs, we'd still have to keep our foot on the gas, because there's teams below us that could you could easily go 8th or something. I mean, look at Ipswich.
Look at Oxford, I think we were 11th. Yeah. Like 2 weeks ago, they were a point behind us again.
Yeah,
1-3 games off the spin. That's how quick it can change. That's why I've kind of think it's kind of not over and done with
it. It's like the complete opposite of last season, where last season you had 2 or 3 teams, if you include Charlton, that were doing well. This season, you, like, even a team we're not talked about now could, it wouldn't surprise me if a team won 10 in a row now and came 5th, do you know what I mean? It's just, it's completely random, and like I said, it changes after every week. You look at the table, you look at fixtures, and it could go one of 20 ways, so I don't think it's over, and it probably won't be the last game of the season where we'll go to Rotherham. I'm fully expecting to go to Rotherham thinking we'll get promoted, so...
I do think, with Phil's point there about the mental weakness, I do think that's kind of a good point, because every game we've got to where we've been playing teams around us, we've not really won, you know, especially away from home. I wonder, though, if that might kind of come into Parkinson's head, and maybe it changes formation for them games, maybe bring scoring in, players a three across the midfield. I always think when we play a team who play three in midfield, we haven't got a clue what to do, because we just get outnumbered. And you know, Power, to be fair to Power, I think Power has improved greatly this season. I think he's been our best player the last few weeks. But Dobson a lot is like a little bit of a like a headless chicken sometimes. He runs around and causes the midfield to get so overrun. So maybe you should look at changing that, but it is a very good point. It's like the evidence is in there, because we don't win away from home to these big teams.
Even going back to last season, we didn't really win at any of the big teams away from home, did we?
No.
Luton withdrew, Charlton withdrew, Portsmouth were beaten.
So there's your setup. Barnsley, we even...
Peterborough withdrew.
Yeah.
Barnsley withdrew, In
terms of today, for example, I think once they'd went 1-0 up, you always, you know, had the hope. But as the game went on and the disallowed goal, you just kind of knew perhaps Wrighton was on the wall. Can you attribute maybe what Phil had said there to, you know, maybe naivety in terms of some of the young lads? Because I know Denver Hume's come in for a lot of criticism today. George Dobson, as you mentioned, has come in for a bit of criticism. And these are lads who, you know, they've been celebrated somewhat in terms of how well they've done of late. But for the past couple of games, they seem to have gone off the boil. And I mean, I don't know, is it the case of we just take them out the firing line and then we bring them back in, or do they need, you know, like an arm around the shoulder? What is it we can do to really get them back to full
especially
focus?
Especially with Dobson, because I mean, you, as much as Dobson came in from Walsall, but Dobson's 21, you know, he's younger than Denver Hume. So, like, in that position where he's at, it's probably one of the most important positions on the pitch, because he's got to, like, you know, he's either got to get forward, get some goals, which... he's only scored one goal for us all season, which was away from home in the cup. Or he's got to do something, like, as in run the game. And he's not done that, I don't think, since he's came for us. I think he's a steady away player, don't get us wrong. But you wouldn't play a 21-year-old all season, would you? There's a certain amount where them, you know, young lads do get tired more, because, you know, they're still learning. You know, they're not fully grown into the bodies yet or anything like that. So maybe looking at Scowen, who... has come in from QPR, higher up division, he must have thought he'd be regularly starting for us now.
It's a strange one, Scowen.
And maybe it is time to maybe bring him in, as much as I think it would be a little bit harsh to drop Dobson. I think it's kind of needed now, where it needs to be something a little bit more different. Give us a little bit of, like, just a bit extra, really.
You think with 10 games, I mean, perhaps we can't really carry any more passengers and...
No.
You've got to drop the passenger up front.
You know what I mean?
You've got to be ruthless, haven't you, and maybe not take into account someone's confidence if you want to get the results, which is, it's hard to say, but at the end of the day, it's a results...
I mean,
business,
isn't it? Not like a great comparison, but we're sat here watching the League Cup final here, and Pep Guardiola on Wednesday dropped his best player in Aguero, and they won. So he's brought Aguero back in today, and they're winning. So, like, I know we haven't got anyone like Aguero.
Do we need to ring Aidan McGee? You know what I mean? Is that
what you're saying? No, we haven't got like anyone like Aguero, but that's shown there of him using his squad to great benefit, right? Yeah. Now, we have got a decent squad, probably. On paper, the best squad in League One. We've got international players on the bench or not appearing at all in Declan John's. If you're still here, Declan, you know, if you're not playing somewhere else by now, and maybe it is now time to use that. And maybe it's kind of like, you know, especially when you're playing 3 games a week, you know, players are going to get tired. Every player is going to get tired playing 3 90-minute games a week and at high intensity football. Maybe this time, maybe just for like. Just a, like a fresh appearance, you know, is to make them changes and use your squad to its benefit.
Listening to all this, I'm fully convinced we'll make changes, but I know for a fact 2 o'clock on Saturday it'll just be the
you're
same.
Expecting the same
it'll just
thing,
be the same
yeah.
team.
Yeah. Yeah.
You'll scroll down a bit and it'll just say Wyke at the end.
Well, one change in particular that has been championed in an argument, you would say, by the exiles, for those who haven't listened, there was a good 20 minute going at it between John and Niall, a good argument about John McLaughlin. Now, Niall is very much pro-Sunderland. He loves everything to do with the football club. And as a reminder, he's even said that he will be getting Phil Parkinson tattooed on his body if we do get promoted. So, yeah, we'll write that down. So we're not going to forget that. But what he mentioned was, he said John McLaughlin was one of the best goalkeepers in the league. He was very commanding. He was excellent. Now, John went against that. He said he's not as good as Lee Burge. For obviously an in-depth review of what they said, I'd recommend checking out the podcast the last 15, 20 minutes, because there was a lot of good arguments put from both sides. Now, I'll be honest, I sided with Niall an awful lot. I think John McLaughlin is our best goalkeeper. I thought in terms of the consecutive run of clean sheets, he's done very well. But lo and behold, after 90 seconds today, I think he's been beat by a goal that he just dropped like a bag of shit, and I thought he really should have done an awful lot better. Do you think it's the case of he's just not prepared, he's not ready, he's not expecting it, he's maybe hoping that it's going to be cleared? I don't want to use the word blame, but who are we blaming for the goal today? Because we had the warning after 15 seconds and a minute later we're 1-0 down.
I think in terms of McLaughlin's contribution to the goal, it might sound mental, but I think if that's later in the game, he saves it. I think it's took everyone by surprise, and especially a goalkeeper. I think as a goalkeeper, you want to get that first cross, or you want to get that first parry, or you just want to get your first touch on the ball. So I think he could have done better, but I think it's just totally took him by surprise. I do think McLaughlin's our best keeper. I do think Burge is a great back up, to the point where if we were to lose McLaughlin to a championship club or something at the end of the season, I think Burge would be an adequate replacement. But I think McLaughlin's very good at commanding his penalty area. I think you watch when a ball goes in the box, he must shout that loudly because all of the defenders sort of duck and move out the way. So I think when you've got a centre-half like Ozturk, who I do think is probably our most improved player, he's still a bit shaky sometimes, and the likes of Flanagan, so a keeper like McLaughlin behind them will fill them with confidence as well. So I think I'm very pro McLaughlin as well, but I will very much listen to the debate and I presume I'll enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm probably team Niall, I think. As much as I thought McLaughlin all game today was poor. Thought the goal, I agree. If that's in the 70th minute, he saves it. So he's not switched on. But even in the second half, I think they had a free kick and he come out and went to punch it and just ended up like kind of palm and it's clear, and they had a shot from it. They had a shot in the second half where he fumbled it and it went into his body, which was lucky enough. But I think the one position I wouldn't be debating would be my goalkeeper, because he's kept that many clean sheets in the last 2 months. He has shown, I still don't think he's as good as what he was last season. I will say that. I don't think he's at that level yet where he was saving us in a lot of games. but it's the last position I'd be looking to change at the minute, so yeah, I'm pretty much on Niall's side. Like,
well, we'll let them listen back to this, and I'm sure that might generate a further argument for them during the week.
Niall, you want me in Sam 20 quid, by the way.
So we'll wrap things up, at least on the Coventry game, and we'll move on to a few bits that we've had sent in. Like I said, we are somewhat out of sync, so I do apologise that we're not in the uni and we're better prepared with a better structure today. We are all over the place. But we did have a listener question. Thomas Carlisle sent in to us. Said, what are your thoughts on the Southend game? Play it or cancel it? So for those unaware, we are due to travel to Southend on March the 28th, but given the game falls on an international weekend, it could yet be rearranged. Early assumptions are that we are likely to be without at least three of our players, with the likes of John and Connor McLaughlin, Tom Flanagan, Declan John and Lyndon Gooch all in contention for a call-up. Now, we'll never really know for sure just how much the fixture pile-up cost us last season, but in reality it can't have helped. Now, if I recall, we had to play our final nine games in 32 days. That was three fewer games that Luton played and two fewer than Charlton, who were all eventually promoted. So what do you think with that one? Do we run the risk of playing catch-up again towards the end of the season, or do you think we'll play this? If John McLaughlin's away, Lee Burge comes in, if Lyndon Gooch is away, then we'll bring Semenyo in. We should be able to go down to Southend and get a result that you expect.
It doesn't matter what team, who we have missing against Southend, we should be putting a team out to beat them. You know, Southend are absolutely dross. And for me, I don't. If they cancel that game, then that's not learning the mistakes of last season. And we're going to go 3 weeks in a league where every result matters. Every week the top six is changing, the top two is changing. If we're missing out on that week, we could end up being 3-4 points outside the playoffs, the way it's going. So we cannot be doing that. You know, like you say, if McLaughlin gets called up, we've just discussed Lee Burge is more than adequate to come in. If Lyndon Gooch gets called up, which I don't think he will for America, then we're more than adequate to cope with him. You know, even though we have mentioned who do you drop Gooch for, but it really shouldn't matter, should it? We could possibly put, even bring Benji Kimbioka, who still does easy to exist, but we could bring him in, and we should still be able to turn Southend over, who have lost nearly every game they've played in this season. We still should turn them up, no matter who we've got missing.
Sam, what are your thoughts?
No, I agree. I think ultimately, I think the fixture pile up did cost us last season, because I can't even begin to remember the amount of times that I was seeing the people with this many points behind, and would say, oh no, we've got a game in hand, two games in hand. I kept saying, that's not 6 points. That'll be a 1-1 draw, which ultimately it was. But it will be a few players, even if Gooch gets called up, that we will miss. But like Ant said, no disrespect to Southend, but they are by far the worst team I've seen this season, and I've seen us play Bolton twice. So
can you imagine as well that we've got like three games in a week, and in that middle of the week we've got to go all the way down and all the way back to Southend.
You know, I didn't even think about that.
Such like even in case of geography, it's so bad.
Yeah.
If it was a side near the top with us, then I would understand to a degree why they're calling it off, because then you want to play your best team against.
Yeah.
You know, say if it was Peterborough at home.
Yeah.
Yes, fair play, that's all right. I possibly would have said I'd play it, because I think we should just be looking at beating every team that we're playing until the end of the season. But you can understand it to a point, but when it's a team, you know, they would be bottom of the league by an absolute mile if it wasn't for Bolton. If Bolton hadn't had that points deduction, they would be rooted to the bottom.
They are a very poor team. I mean, they only stayed up because we randomly let them.
Yeah, and that guy with the mask doesn't play for them anymore.
I know, they owe us 3 points, so we should just be able to get them, to be honest. But no, I think it would be not a poor decision, but it would, looking on everything, I think the powers that be should just say, look, we need to play this game. We need to keep this. I know we've had a dip in form, but we just need to.
I think it's pretty much nailed on that they're going to call it off, though, isn't it?
Like, I think they will.
It seems very, very apparent. Yeah, the whispers are, and from most of the people that we speak with, a lot of people are saying that's going to be called off.
It's just such a weird sort of stop-start, because I was saying earlier, you spend 3 weeks playing every 4 days, and then you go 2 weeks without a game. It's just mental. Mm-hmm.
Who's in charge? Who makes them decisions? Is that Parkinson's decision, or is that just a decision made by the club?
Surely he gets last seat.
I think it does go with Parkinson, because if I remember rightly, albeit I'm not 100%, but from what I understand, Jack Ross had the final say on the Fleetwood game earlier in the season.
Yeah, he called it off.
Which obviously was subsequently replayed on Tuesday, and let's be fair, we weren't at the races.
No.
Now, at the time when that game was called off, I know, you know, people thought we were perhaps hit and miss under Ross, but that was when we'd won, I think, four or five games in a row. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. there is a possibility that we could have put them away at the start of the season and had an extra 2 points.
I think they were poorer at the time as well. They're much better now than they were when it was meant to be played. Mm-hmm. I know that you can't really foresee that happening, but yeah, I think you've just got to play every game, and you should be...
Well, what's the point in having a squad if you're not going to use it? Yeah. You know, it's exactly. What's the point?
And you put players in, like we've been talking about scoring and people, and they should be raring to go. And with them having that extra bounce of getting the first start, you're thinking it's against Southend, they should batter them, really.
It's like, what's the point in having Lee Burge then? What's the point in even having Lee Burge at Sunderland if his job as a secondary goalkeeper, his number two goalkeeper, would be to replace the goalkeeper when injured or when on international duty, especially in League One? Now, and now we're calling off, we've called Fleetwood off, we've called another game off as well, haven't we? Early on in the season, was it Bristol Rovers?
Yeah. We've got that coming up on the midweek.
The away one, yeah. And when we could have easily used, I believe as well, there was only McLaughlin who got a game, wasn't it? And in fact, it was Conor McLaughlin, because McLaughlin didn't play for Scotland. So there was only Conor McLaughlin, who a bog standard left back. And we cancelled a game for it, which we still haven't played, and we don't know if we're going to win.
It can't give your squad players any confidence either, because if you are confident in your squad, like Partington keeps saying, then to him it should just be like, well, we've got the players, and then you give them the chance, and they should.
Can you imagine being Lee Burge though, and like having it in your head that you're not trusted enough to do a performance against the second lowest team in the league, probably the worst team? Yeah. What's that going to say for him?
No, I think we just need to play really.
Play the game.
Yeah.
I think, like you were saying, it has the ring of it that we're not going to, really.
Oh,
Villa have just... Sorry. Villa have just hit the post.
We'll edit this bit out. I think we're all in agreement that we'd play the game, because logistically, you go to Southend during the middle of the week, nobody wants to travel to Southend at any time of the year, never mind going on a Tuesday or Wednesday.
Even for fans, do you want to go down to Southend on a Tuesday night? Now, if that was a Saturday, the 28th of March, we'll fill that, no problem at all.
Yeah,
but we're not going to fill it on a Tuesday night, are we? If people's got work on a Wednesday or stuff like that, it's going to end up we're not going to have as many fans as what we want. So surely you would think, as a whole, even as a club, we should be playing it.
It's 2 days off work for most people, isn't it?
Especially it's a horrible journey.
Travelling downtime, you'd have to take the day off for the day, and then unless you're crackers, take the day off for the next day.
Unless you're travelling by ALS and getting back up here for about 7 in the morning. So no, I think with that one, Thomas, we're all in agreement that we'd like to play the game. Like I said, perhaps we'll wait and see, but the noises are, unfortunately, it does look like that one will be cancelled. We do have a few other random questions that have been sent our way. Now, there was a lot of rumours that Friday of this week was set to be the release of Sunderland Till I Die Season 2. But we actually spoke with Fullwell 73 in the week, and we did ask, you know, was there any truth to the rumours? They turned around and said no, they're still waiting to release it. They don't actually have a release date as of yet. My thoughts at this stage is I really hope and pray they don't release it mid-season. I hope they release it at the end of the season, or better yet, don't release it at all. So it doesn't kind of upset or have any sort of detrimental impact. But Lucy Whittaker asks, Sunderland Till I Die Season 2 is rumoured to be released any day now. Are you looking forward to watching it? And if not, why not?
I think I've got a bit of an unpopular opinion, but I'm actually really excited for it. I really like the documentary. I know.
Just for the recording, me and Craig have literally turned our backs to Sam now.
I think I would very much like it to come out at the end of the season, because I don't think it can help the players especially when we're talking there about, is it going to be playoffs, and they're going to watch our team of last year get to Wembley twice and walk away unsuccessful. But no, I quite enjoy it, and I think compared to the first season, this one's going to be a lot more chirpy, you'd think.
The more positive you'd expect.
I'd be a bit concerned if it wasn't. I'm looking forward to it. I like it, mate. Unless I'm on it swearing or something, then I'm not going to be a fan.
And?
My bother is with both of them, to be totally honest with you. It's like when you're watching a film and you've already seen it before, knowing that the hero dies at the end, you know, I don't really want to watch it.
It's quite a sad death as well, isn't it? This is like Skywalker or Iron Man dying.
Have you seen Man on Fire with Denzel Washington when he saves the little lass?
Yeah.
And then he's like walking and she's going, Casey, at the end. He's like, like, you'll be at the Charlton game, won't you? Be like, Grant, put that ball in the back of the net. You know, and I think I'm more looking forward to Full World 73's Friends reunion more than I'm looking forward to Sunderland Till I Die 2, and I don't like Friends.
Well, so it's like, yeah, but even like saying, like what you said there, it should be on at the end of the season. I wouldn't want to drop on Friday when we've still got a massively important run in, because then we're just going to end up having, you know, the mags are going to laugh at us again, you know, other fans who are coming here are going to start singing that crying on Netflix. Lava might say Craig crying on a blessing because he cried at the playoff final. You know, the cameras weren't on. I've got a horrible feeling as well, I will be on it, because when we signed Will Grigg, Stuart Donald was in the colliery, and I literally shook the cameras in front of us. I shook Donald's hand and went, another promise well kept, and how well that's worked out.
Jesus Christ.
You've got to watch it because of that now. You've got to be a bit excited.
I really hope that's been left on the cutting room floor. Like,
the thing is, you mentioned that. Granted, yes, I've discussed a few times now that I might have got somewhat upset at Wembley. We all did, but mine was influenced heavily by gin. So I did get a bit tearful, but I do have it on good authority that the cameras were right at the front, panned on me and other host Graham. So yeah, that's going to be quite embarrassing.
So you don't want to watch that on Friday, do you?
I don't,
because you will binge watch it, won't you? We'll watch it all the way until the end. You don't fancy it. The night before playing Steve Evans's Gillingham at home, which is going to be a horrible game, watching yourself cry on television.
I think the mad thing is, listening to all that, all three of us might be on it.
Yeah.
Because you know when Honeyman scored at Rochdale and we went above Barnsley, or when we had a game in hand or something,
when we were convinced we were going to go up.
Bear in mind, we'd just scored a goal, so everyone's a bit happy. We were walking down the stairs at Rochdale and the camera was there. My mate was saying, oh, what should we see it again on Netflix? And I was like, oh, I'm not seeing anything. So I just patted my badge or something. And he shouted, we're coming for you, Barnsley.
Oh dear.
So he's very scared that he's going to become a meme. But he deserves it, to be fair, for shouting that. If you're listening, Dan, you deserve it.
When I seen one of the trailers for it, the working title at the time was Season 2, The Comeback.
I thought it was Redemption.
Well,
equally.
The Parkinson Redemption, who knows?
Maybe there's not going to be a Season 3, is there?
I hope not. But we are due to speak with Fullwell 73. From what I gather, they are due to come back on the podcast. But you know what? Let's try and get the Friends cast on, because I don't want to talk about Sunderland Till I Die Season 2. So who knows? We might have Jennifer Aniston in the studio.
I'll come in for that one.
There'll be a queue for that one.
I was going to say, there'll be no excuses like there is today. I don't want to record. I'm upset. I'm at the match. Yeah, there'll be people pouring out the doors for that one. And the final question, which unfortunately we said we didn't really want to discuss, was sent in by Lee Wallace, who said, what did you think of Joey Barton's post-match comments the other night? Is that something that should aggravate us? You know, should we look at that and think, who really cares what Joey Barton says?
Yeah, right. That, you know, I don't particularly... I must say, the thing is about Joey Barton and what Joey Barton should have said on Tuesday night. Now, Joey Barton set a game plan up to perfection against us. You know, they played very, very well, defended brilliantly. Now, they resorted to, especially in the second half, resorted to cheating to try and win a game, right? So that brought on 7 minutes added on time. I wouldn't say that. Joey Barton hasn't done that. You know, he hasn't told his goalkeeper to take 25 seconds or to, like, you know, kick it. Or he hasn't told Niall Madden to roll around injured when there was nothing wrong with him. Now, had they held on there, we would all been saying, oh, that was a fantastic bit of management from Joey Barton. Now, my thing is with his comments, like walking the pitch and stuff like that, it's pathetic. Mm. You know, it, from any football manager now, and what I think with Joey Barton is, say at the end of the season, us and Phil Parkinson come to sort of thing where he's not going to be our manager anymore, so he gets sacked or he wants to leave or something like that. Joey Barton would be the first person to put his name in the hat for this job.
I think he was.
And I'll tell you, and I will put it to you guys, and I'll put it to Sunderland fans as well, we would love to have him here. You know, me personally, I would love to see Joey Barton the way, because I think he's tactically a very good manager. He's mad as a hatter. He's a Sunderland manager in the way, and if only he didn't play for bloody Newcastle, he'd be spot on.
Do you think in terms of his comments, though, kind of, it's like you said, they set up incredibly well to frustrate us, and they almost got away with it. And when he was stood there, you half expected maybe like a Mourinho sort of routine of him running down the touchline.
Oh, he would have done. He would have went berserk. He'd have took his cap off. He'd have been with his cap like right round and everything like that.
But do you think in terms of some of the things he said, it kind of sort of withdrew any sort of praise basically for his players? Because he sat down and he... he only spoke about us, and in respect of the comments that he'd made, you know, he spoke very positively about us at first. He said, you know, we're a top flight team. It's sad that we're this far down. I think, you know, we're taking that with a pinch of salt. I really don't think he believes that himself.
No, of course.
There was a lot of comments about the documentary that we've just mentioned, and saying that it was all about Martin Bain, which I'm sure we can all agree on. But then he just kind of had the 180 where he was like, you've celebrated like you've just won the World Cup. And there was not really one mention of, you know, all my team came here and they done well or anything like that. It was a bit of a weird
that's
one.
That's the thing for me. If I'm a Fleetwood fan, I'm thinking, what's he getting involved with Sunderland for? It's nothing to do with us. Do you know what I mean? If, say, we had a manager who started like having scraps with Fleetwood, we'd be like, what are you doing? It's embarrassing.
Do you know what reminds me of as well? An ex-Sunderland player here, Jordan Pickford, who every time he goes up to Newcastle, gives it the big ones, right? And he always makes a mistake. You know, every time he plays Newcastle, especially up at St James's, he's always making an error. So, like, and Joey Barton's are exactly the same. Come here, set up brilliantly for 90 plus minutes, and then conceded a goal in stoppage time because of his players being morons, and then decides to reflect all of the blame onto, oh, Sunderland are high and mighty, Sunderland are this, Sunderland are that. And as a matter of fact is, that was a League One club playing a League One club.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter where we were 3 years ago, we're in League One now. It was a draw against a fellow League One club who are in promotion, who have promotion aspirations as well as us. So what's he even mentioning this stuff for?
And you know,
I think it's because he wants to be Sunderland manager.
Top job.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, I think in regards of whoever you're playing, if the game is pretty much gone, at least that's what you believe, and you are hanging on and you've been knocking on the door basically since the fifth minute, whoever you play, if you score a 97th minute equaliser,
can you imagine if that celebrate. Was the other way around, though? Can you imagine if we were 1-0 up, right, and they scored in the last minute? He would have been on the pitch with his players. Yeah, yeah. So how's that any different? It's a League One football. It's a League One fixture. You know, if we were playing, like, Gateshead, and we went 1-0 down against Gateshead in the FA Cup and scored in the last minute, are we going to celebrate just as much as we did against Fleetwood? Of course we are, because we're so happy that we haven't lost a game of football, that we haven't been embarrassed, you know what I mean?
I think the whole mindset of, oh, Sunderland are embarrassing, they're celebrating in League One. It's not like we're on loan in League One and we're going to be in the Premier League next year.
Yeah, we're very much in League One football,
right? Imagine if we'd scored that goal and we're just like, oh, well done. Like, it just wouldn't happen anywhere. Do you know what I mean? It's like seeing if Man City, they've just won the League Cup against Villa. If they had scored in the 97th minute, there would have been people out there saying, oh, the squad Man City have you seen them celebrating? It's embarrassing. I just don't get that mindset at all. But
it's a funny thing, isn't it? It tends to play up to like the social media masses. You'll always see, for example, like a midweek game, there'll be one of these football banter accounts where they'll take a picture of some away following, and they deliberately put it up if it's like, you know, not very big in numbers, and they're just looking straight away for easy likes and retweets just to criticise and attack. And you think the first thing you should be doing is actually going, hold on a minute, you know, at least those fans turned up, praise those who did turn up. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of the same with us. People are quick and easy to bash, to go, oh, well, you had to close your concourse and, you know, you've lost 10,000 fans. It's like, yeah, but we're still getting 30,000 through the door, and people are still displaying that same level of passion whether you're in League One equalising against Fleetwood, whether you are against, say, Liverpool at home. So it's still the same.
Yeah, and plus as well, I mean, this will be now that since Tuesday, literally everyone's talked about Joey Barton. I know there was an issue between Wise Men Say and the Sunderland Echo because since just stopped talking about it. And I do think it just needs, like, until we're playing, we'll end up playing them again, if we end up
until,
playing them
again. We'll see him in the semi-finals.
Then it'll all happen again. But for now, it's just let them crack on, you know, just let them crack on, because you can tell deep down this what he wants, a job like this. He would love a job like this. So, you know.
Do you think that sort of shithousery from a manager is something that can potentially get under the skin of the players? I mean, I'm not sure if you've seen the Max Power incident at half time when they came out of the tunnel and, you know, he took the cones.
In the second half, we so lowered ourselves to their level. You know, like Mike McGuire was running, putting the goal on the goal line. Just let them do it. You know, the referee added seven minutes on. Let them get on with it. If that's what they want to do, concentrate on your own game. Concentrate on trying to beat them. Do not get drawn into it, because other teams will come and do it if they know that I mean, I was amazed someone ever got sent off for going into one of them, like, cause that's how kind of rattled we were. That's how rattled the fans were as well, because we were so
quick. For blood, weren't we?
Yeah, we were so quick to get on, like, the players' backs in the second half as well.
I think what you were saying there about playing them in the semi-final, it doesn't feel over, does it?
No.
It feels like the start. And I think he even said, but well, he probably did, because he said everything in his interview after the match, but I think he said if we get if we get them in Sunderland in the playoffs, we won't be too bothered. So I'm fully expecting that. Fleetwood semi-final, Portsmouth final, and then there'll be a season 3 on Netflix if that happens.
I'll tell you what, just a quick one now in terms of where we are in the league. Let's say we finish in the playoffs. We'll put a Twitter poll out prior to the recording, and an awful lot of the responses was from people saying we'll get to the playoffs but we'll not go up. Let's say we're in the playoffs now. Ideally, which team would you want to face out of the rest of the pack?
Wickham,
yeah.
Wickham, because we'll annihilate them at home. It doesn't even matter if we have to go down to Darius Charles' house, get beat 1-0, take that, we'll annihilate them at home. I would take Wickham on. To be honest, Fleetwood, I wouldn't mind taking Fleetwood on England, because I think we'd learn our lessons, you know, and kind of try and get something away. I think if we are seeing playoffs now, we need to look at playing at home in the second leg, you know, bring the battle stay in the light, because not many teams will come here and beat us. Yeah. So we'll have to look at doing that, but... Yeah, I would back us against anyone really in the playoffs. I think Peterborough would worry us going down to Peterborough, because they can blow teams away down there. That would be the only one that worries us.
Sam?
I think the thing about playoffs is we need to, as long as you, well, the structure of the playoffs, the higher up you finish, the easier games are. I know that's not always the case, but I would sort of fancy us in the semi-final, but then I'd, it was similar to last season, how you didn't want Charlton. I remember watching the Doncaster Charlton penalties, thinking, Marcus, please score. And you didn't. Because yeah. You're thinking, Doncaster, they won't sell out with Wembley. It'll yeah. just. But you just. And you think it's the same again, like the question earlier. We play a good team and we'll crumble, really. So I think I would fancy us in the semi finals, unless something went drastically wrong and we ended up playing Rotherham or Charlton Coventry. But then I think at Wembley we would have to get rid of the mindset of playing a big team, we struggle, because unless you're very lucky to get to the final of the playoffs, you're playing one of the other best teams who should have got promoted.
Yeah. And you've got to look at it as well, the playoffs this year, we've got that last season's heartbreak to fall back on, really, haven't we? Because we know how horrible, I mean, that must have been horrible as well, as much as it was terrible for us, it must have hurt the players as well.
Yeah,
you know, it's like you said that when we were talking earlier about Honeyman asking the referee how long was left and having his hand on his head. That sticks, doesn't it? You know, and a lot of that team is still here. That'll stick with
it. Yeah, 09 was in tears at the end, wasn't he? He's still here. There's Power played. The core of the team's still there, really. McLaughlin, White played in the playoffs. So
they'll want to right some wrongs.
Yeah, 100%, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
So before we get a prediction for next week's game against Gillingham, it's 10 games to go. Let's get some early predictions now. What do we think? Are we going to be in the playoffs, top two? Are we going up? We're going staying in League One for a third season?
I can't deviate from when we were on with Kieran Brady. I still think we'll go up. I still think there's something like for us, a run for us to go on where we will end up in the top two. I think it's wide open. I think anyone could. I like to say, I think Coventry's away and then anyone could. It depends. I think we should aim to win. I think we've got four games at home, haven't we? Win all four of them and then try and do something away from one. But I still think we'll knack that second. And I kind of changed my mind. So, yeah, I'm going to say second.
I've always thought playoffs. I think it will be playoffs.
Nah, you have said playoffs all season.
Yeah, I can't get away from a Portsmouth playoff final. I can't.
It's the better way to go up, you think, though, isn't it? In terms of, I know, obviously financial and obviously mental stress, emotional stress and stuff like that, but if we run the winning end last year, we scored, we see a 5 seconds to go like Charlton would have.
Oh, you'd be buzzing for the Netflix documentary. Thing, yeah. If we'd won that Charlton game, that would have been a completely different answer about the documentary.
Oh, 100%. Well, that would have been tears of happiness, wouldn't it?
I can't wait for that. Should we all watch it together, have a few beers?
I will quickly say about the playoff final, what the main two reasons why I don't want to hear, because we've never won at Wembley since I've been alive. And two, we've got a fans game booked on the Stadium of Light, and I really want to play on that, and I really want to play on that day.
Yeah.
And that, it's so horrible to say that, but it's just so many like sort of scars from going to Wembley. Even like we've just watched this League Cup final there, and I know we lost that game and we were so proud of the team, but that hurt. You know, the Checker Trade final, as much as said, oh, it's a DL, that hurt. Getting beaten on penalties, that hurt. And I've been to two playoff finals, both against Charlton. And I've cried my eyes out on both, and they were totally, you know, I was a kid on the first one, cried my eyes out, and I cried my eyes out on the train on the way home.
It's not a nice place to go, is it? Especially with a 6-hour journey home.
It's just that walk
when you're walking over Wembley Way, getting on that tube, and then the away fans coming from the other end, and you're like,
you want to know what it's like to be in there when the other half empties. Do you know what I mean? I've been there 3 times. We've been winning 1-0 every time.
I think
if we go 1-0 up in this time, I'm not going to celebrate.
I think we've been lucky enough as well that the travelling fans, the opposition fans, haven't been complete nothing dicks about it. You know, like in Charlton last year when we were going in, there was a fair bit of aggro on Wembley Way, but when we were coming out, they were like applauding our fans and stuff. I was in the hotel when we played City and literally had all sorts of City, because I had my son on top on that, all sorts of City fans come and say, like, fair play, yous were better than Wigan last year, and Wigan beat us in the FA Cup. You know, that's nice.
We don't want to be nice to anybody, though, do we? We want to shithouse someone at Wembley and stand there with a boombox on and play, like, Our House by Madness or something like that.
I
probably would be a dickhead, like, but, you know.
Just got bad memories of Wembley, even the playoff final. I got back to the hotel, and I hadn't even spoke to anyone on the way back. And I went to go to the reception, and a Villa fan came out, because obviously they were playing the next day, and he started hugging us, and he said, congratulations. I went, what do you mean? He said, I heard you scored later on. I said, no, we didn't. And he looked like he wanted to die, because I must have had a face like thunder. Things like that.
In the first one against Charlton, like I said, I was about 11, I think, and we drove down, and we drove all the way back up, and I held it in. I cried a little bit when Michael Gray missed the penalty, and I held it in all the way to home. Gets in there, dad drops us off and all that. And the first picture I saw was Mickey Gray when I was in my room. It's bringing back tears now, how bad it was. Because I just went. It was just like, I was inconsolable. And then having to go into school the next day, bloody Newcastle fans and stuff. I'm digressing now, but
let's finish on
Ante, who was 6'2", 18 stone, crying like a baby when we get beat off Portsmouth in the playoff final this year.
Right, we're going to finish second. So next week, we are back in action against Gillingham. Must win, we would say. What are our thoughts on that one? Let's get some predictions then.
I hope we see some changes, and I hope we're just, like Ann said earlier, just bounce back. I mean, what's done is done. Although we're getting a bit depressing now, you can't change what's happened.
And yeah.
For some reason, supporting Sunderland, no matter what happens, you're always positive. I don't understand why this happens, but it does. So I think hopefully we see the changes. Lafferty, I'd like to see Scowen, Semenyo, and even people get more time. But I think it'll be a hard game. I think it might be similar to Bristol Rovers, where we dominate, but they, like Ant said, they'll come for a draw. But I think we'll win 2-0 in the end. Lafferty with 2, hopefully.
Yeah, I'm expecting changes. Possibly even demanding changes now, Bob, how bad this week's been. He's not gonna listen to me, is he? But hey, I'm gonna say we'll start with Scowen, Lafferty, and I think Depp and John will come in. I really do think Ian will get rested now. And I'm gonna go for 3-1 to Sunderland, Lafferty, Power, and a towering header from Ali Mozdurk.
Christ. Okay, well, for what it's worth, considering, you know, we've all criticised him, I think we're going to win 1-0 and Charlie Wyke is going to score the winner.
I think he's due one, isn't he?
He owes us one. And you know what? I hope he runs past the southwest corner when he scores, cups his ears and sticks his fingers up. That's what I like to
just
see.
Just at you.
Just at me, just to give a bat to say, you know what? It's basically, F the lot he is. Right, so...
Well, not the first time we've been wrong, I think.
No, I was going to say, we're wrong most times, aren't we? So finally,
I love it when we are, to be fair.
Just before we do wrap things up, just a special mention for Sunderland ladies who travelled away and beat Hull City 4-0 away today. And for Melanie Ray, who picked up National League Manager of the Month award for the second month in a row. Not that that's in any doubt. So again, well done to the ladies. At least one of the sides won this weekend. And Sam, thank you very much both for coming in.
No bother at all, thank you.
No, thank you.
And to everybody listening, if you are still listening after the Wembley heartbreak and Christ knows what else we've discussed for the past half an hour, to make sure you do get the latest Rocker Report podcast as soon as they're released. Remember, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Acast, Spotify or YouTube. The Exiles will be back during the week to preview the Gillingham game, and that is us. Thank you very much for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.